I've just been watching the all the other fun stuff that's currently happening in the world lately.
It happens. It's
Yeah.
okay. It's the world as it is. We're gonna find out how shitty it's gonna be later, so.
I
So.
just want it to be better.
Well, that's a thing for sure.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome to the Toddcast, everybody.
Yes.
Yay.
Yep.
Yay, we are here. We are doing the thing.
Are we doing like what?
Oh.
One more of these for the end of the year?
Yeah,
Yeah.
we'll do one next week, and then that's it.
Do we
And then we'll,
do
that's it for the end of the year.
a top what? Our favorite comics of the
We can do
year?
that. We can do favorite comics of the year next week. That'll be fine. That'll be all right
Yeah.
with me.
I mean, we could do top ones, we could do bottom ones, we could do the whole show like that.
I'm good with either or. Like, I'm good with just top ones. All
Yeah.
top ones of the year.
Yeah, to be fair, this
Doing that.
year we've been there hasn't been a lot of negative, to be
No, it's been
fair. It's
pretty good
been
actually.
yeah. I think the last couple years we've had a lot of we definitely like upped our game when we started doing everything by egg carton price,
Yeah.
like parts now. So I feel like we've
Right.
upped it on that.
I agree.
So.
So, just some random stuff. First, thanks everybody to who came out on Black Friday. It was a successful Black Friday for everybody, and we appreciate everybody coming out and hanging out with us. For those of you who had a Thanksgiving dinner, I hope your Thanksgiving was good. I had three. So I had a family one and two Friendsgivings.
Yes.
One Friendsgiving was awesome because we went to a barbecue place and it was all like fucking pulled pork and brisket.
Nice. Nice.
It was
Hey, it
killer.
still counts.
Yeah,
Still
right?
counts. Still meat. That's all that matters, right?
Exactly. The other one, I don't know whose turkey was better. My mother-in-law's because it was like fall off the bone, moisty, like
Nice.
super great. Or my buddy who smoked a turkey for the first time.
Ooh.
Although one of our friends fucked it up in the middle of it because he showed up and we're outside smoking cigars around the smoker and he lifts up the lid and we're like, "What are you doing?" And he like let all the heat out and he's like, "What? I just wanted to see the turkey." We're like, "Oh my God, you're an idiot." So it was we were very annoyed, but
I'm
it was a
sure.
lot of fun. So
Yeah. I had mine as
also
well.
as I say, I hope yours was good too.
Yeah. Wasn't too
Also,
bad.
don't forget that Three Rivers tickets are now on sale. We've announced two of our guests so far, and
Yes.
all of our vendors that have signed up so far are listed on the website, except for the two that I got payments for this week. I have not added them yet. Maybe three. So, Amy Chu's coming back. First time since the Century 3 Mall days. She just got off doing that Emma Frost White Queen book that I love so much.
Yeah.
She's done a lot of Marvel Unlimited, if you guys didn't read that, like exclusive content for that. She's done Poison Ivy, Red Sonja, a bunch of other stuff. It's a lot of fun. And then also Joe Pruitt, who is a first timer for Three Rivers Comic Con, is coming. He used to be one of the owners of Aftershock Comics. He did Negative Burn back in the day, which was pretty huge. He's currently doing Viking Moon out by Image. He's worked on a ton of other stuff. And he's a really great guy as a writer. Make sure you guys check out. Oh,
Yeah.
Jesus, I don't know why I'm yawning so much. Oh, good Lord, this is gonna be a long night.
Was gonna say we had a good show 2 weeks ago. It's 2 weeks ago
Yeah.
now.
Also, thank you for the guys at Pittsburgh Comic Book Show, the pop culture guys. Ken, Bill, Tony, you guys are awesome. The show was great. We got to show off a lot of really stupid priced books, but didn't really move a lot of them, but we did move some books, so it was good. We had a good time.
Yeah.
And we got to hang out with my buddy Ben Templesmith, who was literally right across the hall from us. It was awesome. I drove him home, like, so you got to see what the South Hills of Pittsburgh looked like. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting. But no, it was a good time. And, you know, I got to meet Tom DeFalco and, oh man, who else was there? Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, I'm blanking on it. It's been a long day. But anyway, it was a really great show. Mike DiCarlo, that's it. Thanks for putting on a great show, guys. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, hopefully we see a lot of guys.
Biggest ones to date?
It definitely was biggest space-wise, because they even took over the hallway this time. Yes. I don't know about attendance. I didn't ask. I don't usually ask.
We seemed pretty busy for a little bit longer than the last few years.
I mean, it also wasn't like super busy at the beginning either, because I think it's because of all the people in the hallway. It kind of filtered that out a little more and spread out a little more. Yeah. But I think it was a good show, and I thought a lot of people turned out, and that's good. Good for them. Yeah. Good job. Our buddy Mike Marvelli was there too. You can read, or not Mike Marvelli, Rob Marvelli. He did Boy in the Bot. You can check it out at all of our stuff. I think maybe it is Mike. Damn it, I can't remember. I just remember his wife's name is Robin because I talked to her more than I talked to him. But he did Boy in the Bot. You can pick it up at most of your local NDCs. It's a good time. We may have him come on the show at some point before our con because I'm pretty sure he's coming down for it. Yeah. All right, so before we get into comics, and at the end of this, at the end of the comic section, we'll talk about the first half of the last season of Stranger Things. I have to tell you what I was doing while we were waiting for my wife to finish work so that I could hop on this. Which, by the way, from now on, we won't have to worry about that because she switches jobs starting Monday, so she won't be working from home. Yay. Which also means I get to play guitar in my house more often, which is awesome. Which, by the way, I also bought a new guitar. It's a James Hetfield LTD Explorer. It's awesome. Yes. But what I was doing while waiting for her to get done was I was like, oh, man, I kind of want to watch RoboCop. So I get on the searchable smart TV thing. And I'm like, oh, RoboCop, cool. And I click it. Yeah, it was definitely the TV show. and I was like, eh, fuck it, I'm gonna watch it. So I'm watching it, and I get through the first two episodes, and holy crap, is it like it's not even as good as RoboCop 3. Like,
yeah,
like, and RoboCop 3 was the worst of the three, but not that it was bad, but it definitely wasn't as good as the first or the second one.
I think it's one of those, they really tried to get the, they tried to milk RoboCop like really bad to the point where it was like, it was bad. It's not as bad as the cartoon. The cartoon series was actually worse.
Oh yeah. I don't know, man. Like at least the cartoon you could tell was designed for kids. Like this show kept going back and forth. Like, there'd be moments, like, there'd be, like, a 20-minute span where I'm like, man, I think this is designed for kids. And then there would be this, like borderline sex scene. And I'm like, never mind. And then it's, like, back to it. And I'm just like, what is going on here? And there's, like, a little girl who's, like, who's named Gadget, who's, like, her, like, the main kid helper for RoboCop through the series. And, like, his partner's a different person. Like, it's interesting, but the guy who plays him does a good job of playing him, though.
Yeah.
But it was definitely weird. So, anyway, yeah, I just wanted to talk about how I watched RoboCop and it was pretty bad. So, I also watched the second season of Mayfair Witches, which is now on Netflix. Nice. That went very quick. It was only 8 episodes, and it was very good. And it definitely leads into the Talamasca TV show. So if you're into Anne Rice stuff, if you're into, like, Lestat, if you're into Louis, if you're into Armand, if you're into the Mayfair Witches, like, that whole universe is now part of the AMC universe, and the Talamasca is part of that. That's the newest show. I haven't watched it yet because I don't have AMC, but I can wait for it to hit Netflix. So, but I really liked everything they've put out so far. So make sure you guys check it out. I think it's good. So, all right. And one last thing before we start talking about comics. Tomorrow night, Friday night, in Elwood City, is Elwood City Light Up Night. So if you want to come out and check that out, I will actually be there. From what I understand, Home and Gardens TV is actually going to be video, like doing some video interviews like throughout the night of Elwood City's Light Up Night, which is kind of crazy to me, but okay. Yeah, I recommend going and checking it out. It's going to be a good time. I'm going to be up there, like I said, all day having fun. Yeah, come on up. Give me a high five. It'll be a good time. Buy me some fair food if they have any outside. It'll be a good time. All right. My first book is Absolute Green Lantern, number 9. So I haven't talked about this book in a while, but you find out that Joe is a lesbian. And that's her ex-wife, Cam, who is who works for the, what do they call it? Like, it's not the DOD. It's basically the DOD, but it's not the DOD. But she kind of works for Hector Hammond in this, and Mr. Bones. But anyway, it starts out with this scientist getting weird transmissions from space, and his partner comes in, and he's, you know, telling him about everything and catching him up on things. He's like, oh, did you bring lunch? He's like, no, and he shoots him in the chest. He's like, what the hell? And then he pushes a button, and you realize that it actually wasn't him at all. So then that guy who killed him calls his boss and is like, no, I don't have everything, but, you know, this is about aliens and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay, so who do I have to find now? He's like, Joe Mullen. He's like, okay. So he, you know, starts making this new mask. And then it cuts to Joe and Cam, and Hal is passed out on Cam's couch. Joe and Cam have this huge fight, and Joe blows up at her, for the most part. And, Cam, like, lights a cigarette, and it's like, wait. You didn't tell me about a bird guy. Because the first, like, she's talking about her experiences seeing the green and all this stuff, like the green light. And she's like, all right, so I'm going to go to work, and you just write down everything you remember. And she's like, okay. And they also figure out that if she takes her wedding ring off, which is the ring that had absorbed the powers from Aemon Sir, like, Cam puts it on, and she smashes through a table, but she's like, well, apparently it only works full-blown for you, so put that back on, because you're going to need that to protect yourself. So she leaves, it cuts, and she's going to see her partner, who is Simon Bass. Simon's boss is, they basically are like, we need to find Hal Jordan. So they go off to do that because they realize that Joe is a friend of theirs, or Joe's a friend of Hal's. So Simon and his partner go off, and then their boss, Agent Double, calls Carol Ferris and asks for Hector Hammond, and he's like, hey, we may have a possible location for that guy. They're talking about Hal. So then there's a knock at the door at Cam's apartment. Joe goes over, looks through the door, and sees that it's John Stewart. And so she opens the door, gets shot in the arm.
Oh, my.
And then she's like, what the hell? And gets shot in the chest. By gold bullets, by the way. And the guy hits the button, and it's not actually John Stewart. It's the guy from the beginning, who is Goldface. And can change his appearance and stuff. So it was pretty cool the way they put it out there like that. At least I thought. So I'm still really digging this book. I like the second arc. I definitely Think this is one of my favorite of the Absolute Universe. So if you're into it, cool. If you're not, I mean, I know most people are just still reading Batman and Wonder Woman for the most part. Check out Green Lantern. It's really cool, especially if you like the Green Lantern core and the mythos. It's kind of an interesting twist. I really dig it. Same with the Flash stuff. So I'm giving this a 10 out of 12 eggs.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It was that good just for the... just for, like, the gun, like, the people getting shot randomly thing. So.
All right, we got the Blue Falcon and Dynamite number 4. We pick up where we left off, where Blue Falcon, well, you're seeing him battling with Dynamite, and he wakes up, and it was all a dream. He's still recovering in bed with... Doc Vincent and Dynamite looking after him. And while they're doing this, Beast Woman is trading in his Blue Falcon's belt for 2 million acres of rainforest and her debt to be paid off to some evil millionaire guy or billionaire guy. Surprise, surprise. And as that situation's going on, Dr. Vincent tracks down, like, and goes to the zoo, and see, this is all happening in the zoo because that's where Beast Woman's evil hangout is. She sees all this, she gets caught. Blue Falcon finally kind of wakes up and goes down to his lab, finds Dynamite recharging. We kind of get like a few pages of Blue Falcon blaming himself for the whole him be getting shot and everything. And Dynamite's like, this was not your fault. You're my best friend and you're the best human dog could ever ask for. And it's very touching and it's very much like on brand with Dynamite and Blue Falcon's relationship, and I'm glad it's kind of being brought out like this. But they finally track down Beast Woman and everything. They get aboard her plane as she's flying to her Amazon acres, and this is where they confront her, and that's where the book ends. I will give this a solid 10 out of 12. It's not as good as the last issue where you saw Dynamite do completely insane violence. There's not a lot of violence in this one, but you're getting a lot of progressiveness in the story. Obviously, the billionaire is probably going to be the overall evil guy throughout the whole series because he wants Blue Falcon's technology and this, that, and the other. It's pretty solid. I love the, it's seamlessly progressing through the story. The art is excellent. I'm not going to complain about the art either. This has just been fun. Definitely from one of the silliest Hanna-Barbera properties to very, very serious. And I love the tone of this. So
it's awesome. Whoops, you're going again. I screwed it up. Yep.
All right, to another one of my
favorites. My bad.
This is a first this year. It's all indie stuff for me this week. There's not one Marvel or not one DC in this. This is all...
Well, I have a Marvel, a DC, and an IDW, so I got you covered. This is super weird, though, for you.
Yeah, isn't it?
But you're finally coming to the dark side!
Well, it's all characters that I love anyway. Matter if it's they were with DC or they were with Marvel and now they're indie. It's all IPs I love anyway. Here's Phantom number 3. We just continue to see Phantom's knocking out mercs left and right. He basically beats up this dude in the Jeep that tries to shoot him. And he ends up helping him because, you know, he does break his arm and everything. And then he punches him, you know, signature Phantom punch, leaving the ring mark on his face. Because, you know, It's the Phantom. Right. It's what it does. He does get the antidote from the Jeep for the Chief, which, if you recall from the beginning, the Chief was being poisoned by the Sang Pirates leader. And that's like where this is all coming from to begin with. Garan is still talking to Sang, who pretty much is just blown off the meeting at this point because the Phantom's being mentioned. He's like, you know, he's like, I thought we were making headway, but you're stuck in these stupid, you know, this made up bull crap, you know, because he doesn't believe in the Phantom. Meanwhile, like, the entire encampment's in just pure chaos. So Sang tells his guard to keep an eye on Garan. And you're finding out all the guys from the previous couple of issues where he finds the two guys tied up in the tree. He finds the two guys knocked out on the ground. And Sang's just getting, he's pissed. He loses his shit. He's not cool, calm, and collected. Garan escapes with few, like, with his own martial arts, like, kind of going on. So that was cool. They head back to the village. Well, Sang and the Mercs are starting to take over the village, sealing everybody in their houses. And they're going to burn everybody in the village. And this is where the Phantom's going to come back and start preventing it, or at least confronting the Sang Pirates and the Mercs. So that's where the book ends. I'm going to give this a solid 11 out of 12, but it's, again, one of my favorite characters of all time, comic-wise, one of the OG superheroes of all time. I'm glad Mad Cave has taken this, like, to the next level. Enjoying the art, the writing, solid.
Who did the cover?
I have no idea who did the cover.
Okay, because here's my problem. Here's my problem with the cover. You ready? So, proportionally, the right arm is way tinier. I know it's supposed to be back further, but that's way tinier. That's a way tinier arm.
Yeah.
Like, unless he's like only weightlifting with his left arm. But well, also,
you know what,
look at those thighs. Those thighs. They're like wider than his head. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm just like, but at least his feet are proper. It's not.
They drew him like fucking He-Man.
if they unmask the Phantom and it's He-Man, it transitions into.
Well, he's purple, He-Man. So he's probably Skeletor. But you know.
Well, he does have his wolf, so I guess like Skeletor with Beastman.
Yeah, there you go. Like, it's, but he's drawn like a He-Man character. With a jacked up right arm.
Proportions aside, in general, the art is good. We've seen way worse.
Oh yeah. I know. I'm sitting here looking at it while you're talking about it. And I'm just like, who the hell drew this cover? And why did they use He-Man as an option?
I see the little blue square there on the cover. I think that's who the artist is. I just can't read it from that.
Yeah, I don't know who it is either. I'd have to look on Penguin's website. But yeah, okay. Still crazy.
Yeah.
All right. I was trying to do Palmiotti to Palmiotti. So we're going Palmiotti Phantom Palmiotti. So my second book is Daredevil and Punisher, The Devil's Trigger, number one, by Palmiotti, Tommaso Bianchi, and Brian Valenzia. And then there's a mini comic in the back. So basically it starts out, Daredevil wakes up and he is tied up hanging from the ceiling. And he's like, what the hell, Punisher? So, then you hear the story about how he was, talking to one of his clients. Then you find out that this one client is like a mobster guy, and he talks to him in his house. He's basically like, you would be safer in jail. I don't know why you're coming out here. And he's just like, yeah, I'm not living in Rikers. That is awful. He's like, I'd rather be in protective custody here. Weirdly, the girl that he's with has a Tommy Castillo tattoo on her arm. I have pictures I'll send you later. Because I was like, holy shit, it's a Tommy Castillo tattoo and a Tommy Castillo hair thing. It's interesting. Anyway, so they go and do the courtroom thing, and Daredevil sees Castle leave early, like come into the courtroom and then leave early, so he goes up and finds him on the roof, and they get into a bit of a brawl. Punisher pulls out like a sonic weapon, knocks Daredevil out. Daredevil wakes up with his hands bound and a gun in his hand, and he basically says, you can kill me before I kill this guy, or I'm going to kill this guy. You decide. And so he pulls the trigger on the gun before he shoots, and it just goes click, and he's like, damn it, no firing pin in my gun. So his client dies on the street. So then Punisher punches him again, and then he wakes up hanging like he did in the beginning, only to find out that he's actually in a warehouse where all of these gang leaders are now meeting to talk about the changeover of power. Like one of them gets stabbed in the throat. It's pretty awesome. And then they all go out and have milkshakes and breakfast. And then Daredevil comes down. He's like, God damn it, Frank. Now I gotta go find you. And he's like, once I clean up this mess, I'm coming after him. So I thought it was fun. The little mini comic at the back is really funny, because it's Daredevil, Punisher, and Black Panther and Kingpin, and they keep daring Daredevil to do things, so he does them, because he goes, I dare you to jump over this thing, and he goes, okay, cool, and he does it. And then he's like, jump back over it. He goes, no. He goes, I dare you to jump back over it. And he's like, fine. And he does it. And then Kingpin's like, I dare you to jump or do a flying jump into the river. So he does. He does this like crazy long flying jump into the river. It was pretty funny. So I thought it was good. I definitely recommend it. I'm not a huge Punisher fan. Or a big Daredevil fan, really, but like there's certain runs of both of those books I really love, but I wouldn't say I'm like a avid collector of either of them. But I like Jimmy Palmiotti, and I think he's a good writer, so I thought I'd check it out. Giving this a 10 out of 12, mostly because I liked everything I saw. I did not think it was bad at all. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Alright, this is Tales of the Shadow Man. Now, technically, this is book 4, because you and me discussed this before we started this up. But it's one of 3 in this Ghost of the Bayou miniseries, I guess.
Like, do you have the book in front of you? Because if you do, you could open it and see what it says in the indicia. Because I'm not curious. I don't have
the book in front of me. But just going by what the cover is, it says number one out of 3. But it is book 4 because it's all the same creators. It's the current creative team, and it is continuation of what's going on, because there is a connection in this book with the apocalypse that we talked about in the last issue. So it is all together. They're just doing a quick mini series, I guess. I don't know like what they're doing. So Valiant, if you want to contact us, let us know what your plan is with this stuff, please let us know. Or should I just wait for the big omnibus of all this and everything?
I think they need to legacy number it on there somewhere.
Yeah. They're going to have to start here because it's hard to keep track. But right. We start off this book. Of course, we see a brutal murder in the bayou at the dead side. So this is in the dead side. Brutal murders by the Bayou Cannibal Killer. He killed this, you're seeing a kill girl, and he's skinning her. And you see an elderly lady witnessing it, and she runs. She is telling what her story to my pronunciation of this dude, the monkey is awful. Is that Jaunty?
I think that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, Jaunty. Now that he is mayor of Dead City, and he's like, this problems. He's like, we find out this elderly lady is Jolie Da Song. She was once a powerful voodoo warrior. But she's older, and she's like, well, I'm old, so I can't do what I used to do when I was young. And he's like, well, old doesn't mean useless. And he hands her a amulet to help her summon Shadow Man. And she informs Shadow Man of what's going on. Shadow Man cannot find this Bayou Cannibal because he's somehow elusive. They consider him a quote unquote ghost because they can't lock on to him, so to speak. We do find out, like, while this is going on between Shadow Man and Jolie, he is meeting up with Sister, which I think is the ultimate bad guy in this apocalypse thing. So we're going to find out who Sister is. I think we met Sister in the last book. She would be the one that had the she was the demon inside the criminologist that ate the one cop. I think that's who Sister is supposed to be, but I could be wrong. But Shadow Man and Jolie set up a trap for this cannibal. She uses some of her old spells in this knife. And when she stabs him with this knife, it actually tethers him down and makes him susceptible to Shadow Man's powers, which is exactly what happened. But the cannibal did mortally wound the Jolie. But Shadow Man offers her a way to save her by making her a powerful shadow as an ally, similar to the way he is. And she said, do it. And he's like, are you sure? And she said, yes. And at the end, you get to see her as a shadow in all her youthful version of her as a shadow. And that is the end of the book. I like this. With the exception of the stupid numbering, I don't know what they're doing with that. But in general, same creative team, good story. It's cool to see the creation of his shadows as his ally. It's still cool. He still doesn't know who the heck he is, which, again, they keep pointing that out and dropping little hints, this, that, and the other. So... we'll see where that leads on to at this point. But I'm going to give this... I'll give this a 10 out of 12.
Nice.
Yeah. The art is actually a little bit better on this miniseries than it was on the first couple. So I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that it's more black and white. Maybe. A little bit more. Maybe that made it a little bit... Like, the cover here is awesome. I'd love this cover. I'd rather have that than the random browns and yellows that they add. But hey.
I like them both. I think they fit. I think the other ones kind of had more of a Vertigo vibe to them, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's more Vertigo. So. More John Constantine than anything else.
Yeah. But I dig it. I think they both look good. Yeah. So. All right. My last book is Red Shirts number 5, Star Trek Red Shirts number 5 by Chris Cantwell. So in this book, Ensign Chip Miller and Ensign Zaina Rad are the only two left out of like 20 red shirts. So the book starts out with a recap of him being stranded on that one planet after being beaten by by a Mugados, which are those like white ape dudes with the single horns that we saw in the classic Star Trek. Then it picks up where they're both, the one's on the Klingon ship, one's on the Romulan ship. Or they're both on the Romulan ship, but they're being captured by Klingons. And you're talking about this disc that they stole because it was all about espionage. So Rad, the girl ensign, starts basically doing like a power play with the Romulans and being like, hey, like, you know, Muckrat, the Klingon captain's like, you're being played, like, there's no way they're gonna give you this, like, what the fuck. So she's basically like trying to get them to fight. So she eventually gets them to hit the Romulan captain to agree to a duel to the death between the two of them. And she actually like puts up a pretty good fight. And then you find out at the end that you see Miller grab one of the Klingons' phasers and kill Rad. And you find out that Miller has been the mole the whole time. And the Romulans were actually the ones who rescued him and fixed his eye but made it basically like a camera for them. So he's actually working for the Romulans. The Romulans then blow up all of the Klingon ship after they get back to the Romulan ship. And then he's picked up by the Enterprise at the end, and you know, he's talking to Captain Kirk, and Captain Kirk said, did you get a look at the spies? Can you identify him? He's like, sorry, Captain Kirk, I didn't. Were you able to determine if there was a mole? Yes, sir, it was Rad. She tried to hand over the data disk, so I had to take her out. Save the disk, save Starfleet. I had the hardest thing I ever had to do. And then he says, you hear that, red meat? At, like, the red shirt standing beside Kirk. He's like, yeah, I sure do. And then Kirk says, the other security officers, Ensign, how did they die? And he just said, they died heroes, sir. And that's how it ends. So it was a really cool twist at the end. I really dug that. For that reason, I'm giving it a 10 out of 12. But if you buy this cover, I'm giving this cover specifically an 11 out of 12, because our friend... Hold on. Come on, stupid computer. Bobby Lynn used to work at our Century 3 store. That's literally his face. Because he knows, apparently he like knows the guy who did the cover, and he used a picture of him in uniform to do this. And I was like, shut up. And he's like, no, really. Like, so there's a picture of Bobby dressed as a Vulcan, and he used this as his picture. So I just thought it was hilarious. I had to pick up that cover as well, just because. I really enjoyed it. So, but yeah, anytime there's a Star Trek thing that has like a weird twist in the end, I love it. Love it. And they wrote it well. It was very good. I dug it. All right. So, I want to give another shout out real quick before we go into the Stranger Things part. So this week my episode where I guest appeared on Last Comic Shop came out. So make sure you guys check that out. We talk about Dark Knights of Steel. You're going to hear me trash it mostly, but if you want to hear me trash it, go right ahead and check it out. I just was not a fan. It did not work for me. So make sure you check that out. All right, now is spoiler time. Spoiler time. Spoiler! for the last first half of the last season of Stranger Things. The second half, three or four episodes come out on Christmas, and then the very last episode comes out on New Year's Eve. If you guys haven't watched the show from the beginning, before you watch this chunk of season, I will recommend you at least watch season two again, because it does tie into the very last episode of the season. I also would say even watching season four again, with everything that goes on with Max, is probably a good thing to have on there too. And Eddie, because a lot of what happens with... So Dustin basically doesn't want to let the Hellfire Club disintegrate, so he's trying to keep that involved. Max is still in a coma, but you actually find out she's stuck in Vecna's world in a memory. And Eleven has become like a super badass. And Hopper is now like basically like a military guy. What the hell was her name? What was the Linda Hamilton, that's her name. She from Terminator is like the big bad in this season. Like she's running a lab inside the Upside Down, studying it. And she's using 8 from season 2 to power some shit in there, and that's what she's keeping inside this door. And it's actually very, very well done. It was super well written. I definitely really really thought it was a very good first half of the season. And even though the kids are now like in their 20s, and they're still playing high school kids, not even seniors yet, but whatever. Still, like, they still have the idea and the concept of it, which is what I really like. But the government basically has built a wall around Hawkins, so they can't leave. So, Robin's, like, running the radio station called the Squawk. So, like, she gives out, like, code to all of the team to do that, like, to do things. So they all have to listen to the radio all the time when she's on it. It's just really, really good. And I definitely recommend watching it. If you've never seen the show, it is definitely not for everybody. Like, as you and I were talking beforehand, you didn't really like it. But
my opinion of it is I like the first season. But then, like, the other seasons after got a little bit... I want to say easy, like to predict. Like when I can, like, I'll watch, like my wife watches it. She's seen it all pretty much. But like, I'll catch one episode and I'm like, oh, are they doing this, this, and this? And she'll look at me. She's like, did you watch this ahead of time? I was like, no, it's just easy to read. It's easy to think out. And if I see a series like that, I can't, it doesn't do it.
I thought season 3 was a little like that. But one and 2 are still probably my favorite ones. Then 4, then 3, and 5 still up in the air because it's not done yet. Yeah. But right now it's probably looking like it's going to be probably third place. But there is a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of cool Easter eggs in it. If you grew up in the 80s, it's even better for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's probably why my wife likes it a little bit more than I do, is like she remembers like everything in the 80s a little bit better than I do because she's a little bit older than I am.
Yeah.
Like you and me were baby and kids, little kids. Yeah. So our memories of the 80s a little bit different is where I remember He-Man and G.I. Joe and Transformers, and that's what I watched in the 80s. You know, the older kids were watching, you know, Breakfast Club and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I mean, I, like, I wouldn't say that I don't remember that stuff, but I remember it in a different period of the 80s, right? Because we didn't get our first VCR until, like, 88, maybe, 89.
Something like that, yeah. So,
and then it was Ghostbusters and Breakfast Club and all these movies that we had never seen before. Because
video stores, you got to see everything.
Yeah. In the early 90s, I think I grew up with more 80s stuff than that. But without, like, the cartoons were the biggest thing for me in the 80s. And some like, music.
I like Stranger Things because when it came up at the time, it was, like, really cool. It was like, hey, there's D&D and this and that. And they've kind of gotten away from that now. Like, which I understand the kids are a little bit older.
They like, kind of the come back to older. It a little more in this season. Because, like, basically the whole show is one big D&D campaign.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Vecna campaign. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But it's, again, it's just not my, I told you, if I turn it on, I try to watch it, I fall asleep. And that's my critique with a show or a movie, is if I, even if I'm dead tired and I'm so interested in it, I will watch it all the way through. I will be dead tired after, but I will watch it.
Right.
If I turn it on, next thing you know, I'm out. And that's pre-gummy. Like taking it going free, you know, but
right.
You know, but that's just me. And I know Stranger Things has a huge following and I'm not going to crap on it. It just isn't my thing. That's all.
No. And that's totally cool. I really enjoyed what they're doing with it. There's also a thing in there that I'm not going to spoil, but it's really cool. One of the characters one of the characters does some shit in the last episode that I didn't see coming at all, and it really surprised me, and I was very happy with it. So I'm
good,
very excited.
Good or bad?
Good.
Okay.
It was a good surprise, because I was like, I was kind of like, maybe, I don't know, maybe, but I'm like, you know, like, that, it's way out of that character's, like, persona, and then it happened, and I was like, holy shit, this is going to be an awesome last 5 episodes. So, I'm very excited to see how it goes. So, other than that, that's all I got. Like I said, we got one more episode next week, for the rest of the year, and then we're going to take a couple weeks off to get through Christmas and New Year's. And we'll be back in January after that. So, trying to think if there's anything else I need to say to people besides go support your local comic shop. Like, do it. Yeah. You know, now's the time.
I hope everybody's having a generally good holiday. You know, be careful. Yeah. Snow, it is winter out now. We officially had our first complete snow this week in the Pittsburgh area, so that was fun.
Dude, so I was going to work on Tuesday to the mills, right? Mm-hmm. And I get kind of just past RIDC Park, right? And there is a car that had rolled over and flipped onto its side on the side of the road. And there's like cops and a tow truck and a fire truck and all kinds of shit. Like, it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And I was just like, really? It's the first snowfall. Why are you driving like a normal, why are you driving normal speeds? What the fuck? But then I saw worse videos of like a FedEx truck that fell in, like drove off and landed in a creek sideways. There was a bunch of wrecks like down 51. There was a couple on like in the north side. It was crazy. Like, I was just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, learn to freaking drive. Like, we live in Western PA. Like, how long does it take you to learn to drive in the snow? Yeah, I mean, we went to my mother-in-law's in Greenville for Thanksgiving. Before we left, my wife's like, do you think I should wear real shoes? Because she was just going to wear sandals. And I'm like, yes, wear real shoes. I'm like, it's going to snow. And she's like, what? I'm like, it's supposed to snow today. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. So we get up there, and we get just past Grove City, and it starts to snow. And we got there at noon. When we left at 6 o'clock, they had 3 to 4 inches on the ground. So I was like, aren't you glad you didn't wear your sandals? So anyway, cool. All right, guys. Let's, like I said, that's about it. We'll see you next week. You know, we'll do a couple wrap-ups of our favorite books of the year, either by title or by storyline. Yeah, just, you know, go out, have some fun, be with your family, your friends. You know, enjoy the holidays, and, you know, stay safe. We want to see you in the new year. Yes, and remember, Three Rivers tickets are on sale. Go buy some. And for the first time ever, we are doing a military discount. However, you can't get them with the military discount until the days of the show, because we need to physically see it. So, yes. So you need to bring your valid military ID. It can be a veteran's card. It can be an active military card, for any branch. Yes, that includes Space Force. And you can bring it up to the ticket booth. You show that to us, and we'll give you $10 off your ticket. But it's only for the person whose name is on the ticket, or name is on the ID. So you can't be like, me and my 10 buddies are getting in, and I'm using my ID to get $10 off all of us. No. Like, you would get $10 off. They would have to pay the rest, unless they were also military and they had their valid ID. Because you earned that, and we're giving it to you. So,
yeah.
So, all right, cool. Yeah, that's about it. I guess we'll talk to everybody later. And like I said, be safe.
Yes.